All right, so we'll say good morning. So today's daf kuf chaf gimel, but let's actually start from two daf of beis amud beis. No tell adam kornos. So remember again, the Mishnah said that on Shabbat. Remember, we're back to the laws of muktzah now. But interestingly enough, as much as we studied the laws of muktzah earlier, in this parak we're really going to get into the nitty gritty of muktzah, specifically the different categories, different types of items. So the Mishnah spoke about the idea that you can go and you could take a cornus, you could take a hammer on Shabbos, lefatzeh bo'es ha'gozim, to go ahead and smash nuts. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, cornus shel ha'gozim, lefatzeh bo'es ha'gozim. So Rabbi Yehuda said, what does that mean? That means that you can go ahead and you could take a hammer that's used for crushing nuts, and you can use it to crush nuts on Shabbos. Look at Rashi. Corner shella gozim hamiyucha lepetzias gozim udiktani masis and denot lenosel lemelachto mishum deikara lemelachas hater. So I will say, interestingly enough, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that the chiddush of the Mishnah is that if you have a hammer that's used to crush nuts, you can use it to crush nuts on Shabbos. What's the chiddush? The chiddush is because, since technically speaking, it could be used for other type of prohibited activities, one might have thought. That you shouldn't be able to move it at all on Shabbos. Kamash malon, that as long as you're using it for its permitted purpose, you're permitted to do so. Aval shal nefachin, lo. But let's say if you were to go in and take a blacksmith's hammer. So remember, a blacksmith's hammer, obviously, using a hammer to go in and, let's say, bang out metal for smithing, obviously that's asur on Shabbos. But Rabbi Yehuda is saying, even if you wanted to use the hammer for a permitted purpose of smashing nuts, that would also be prohibited on Shabbos. Kasover, davar shemalachto le'isser, afilu litzorech gufo aser. Because Rabbi Yehuda holds, we'll say these terms are going to be very important. Klishim alachto le'iser means a utensil whose primary usage is prohibited on Shabbos. So a klishim alachto le'iser is one, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you can't even use it on Shabbos for a permitted purpose. Even though now there's nothing wrong with smashing nuts on Shabbos, I can't use the blacksmith's hammer, since the blacksmith's hammer is primarily used for a prohibited purpose. So the Gemara goes on. Amali Rabba, elemi ato, seifa diktoni, ve'es hareches, ve'es hamalzeg, lo seis alov lekoton. So we'll say, but we saw at the end of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that a reches, right? A reches is a winnowing shovel, or a mazlik. Remember, a winnowing, remember, is where you go ahead and you essentially... You take the wheat and you throw it up in the air, and the wind comes and removes the chaff from it. So that's called a reches. A mazlek is a pitchfork. So the Mishnah deals with the specific case. So let's say you have to go out and you want to hand something to a child across the stream of water. So you can go ahead and you could put food on one end of the winnowing shovel or of the pitchfork and hand it over to the child. So the Gemara says, reches u'mazlek mi miyachadei le'lekaton. But one second, these are objects that are primarily used for a prohibited purpose. They're obviously not primarily used to hand food to a kid across a stream. And yet what? We see you can use it on Shabbos for a permitted purpose. Elo amarabo kornos shal nefachin levatzeh bo'es ha'gozim. Rather, Rabba says, what is the Mishnah teaching us? The Mishnah is teaching us that you could even take a smith's hammer and use it to go ahead and smash nuts. Kasover, because Rabba holds, top of kuf chav gimel, davar shemalachto le'iser le'tzorech gufo mutter. Because Rabba holds that even if you have a kli shemalachto le'iser, which again, remember, is a utensil that is used primarily for a prohibited purpose, one is permitted to go ahead and use it for a permitted purpose on Shabbos. That's what it means, l'tzorech gufo. L'tzorech gufo means using the utensil in a permitted fashion, even though the primary usage of the utensil would be prohibited on Shabbos. So according to Rabba, the smith's hammer, which is primarily used for an activity that's prohibited on Shabbos, can be used on Shabbos for a permitted activity, i.e. smashing nuts. Fine. Top of Kuf Chav Gimel, second line. Esve Abaye l'Rabba. So Abaye poses a question to Rabba. Meducha, so you will see later on, I will say the Braisa quote. Meducha is a press. Rashi points out to here, Shadochen Boshum, a garlic press. Now obviously a garlic press, you can't press garlic on Shabbos. So Abaye says, Rabba, Meducha, im yesh boshum, if it already has garlic in it, mitalt linosa, then you're permitted to go ahead and move it on Shabbos. Ve'im lav, but if it doesn't have garlic in it, in metat linosa, you may not go ahead and move it on Shabbos. Rabbi will say, interestingly enough, look at Rashi. In yesh pashum etalklin osa agav ashum. If there's already pressed garlic in it, which obviously you could use the already pressed garlic on Shabbos, then you can move the press on Shabbos. However, if not, you may not move the press. Now, interestingly enough, the novelty over here is look at Rashi. V'im lave in metalklin kigol neshev aleha kevan de'ikam malachto l'schika v'him aleches aser isser mishum toke. I will say you can't use a garlic press on Shabbos because the press obviously cuts up the garlic into small pieces. Cutting an object up into very, very small pieces on Shabbos is an isser of tochein of grinding. So the Braisa says like this, if you can go ahead, if there's already ground garlic in there, so essentially we can look at the press as being a receptacle for the garment for the garlic, then you can move the press. But if there's no garlic in there, you can't move the press. And I will say, technically speaking, the press has a permitted purpose. What's the permitted purpose? You could use it as a chair. You could use it, you could sit. It's large enough to sit on. So you could use it as a chair. So nevertheless, what do we see? That even if you have a kli shemalachto le'iser, an object that is primarily used in a prohibited fashion, even if there is a permitted use for it on Shabbos, you can't use it. Armalei, to which Rabbi responds, ha'mani, whose opinion does this price reflect? Rabbi Nechemihi. The Amar Ein Kli Nital Ela Letzor Tashmisho. Rabbi Nechemi Rabosai is of the opinion that a utensil could really only be moved on Shabbos if for its primary purpose. Look at Rashi, Tashmisho, Tashmish Hamiyuchadlo. So we're going to see, this is going to be a fundamental machlokes in Hilchos Mukta between Rabbi Nechemi and many others. Rabbi Nechemi is of the opinion that a Kli could only be moved on Shabbos if its primary usage is permitted on Shabbos. But even if it has a secondary permitted usage, but that secondary usage is not its primary usage, that does not give you a license to move it on Shabbos. So the perfect example would be this garlic press. See, even though technically speaking, yes, its primary usage is prohibited on Shabbos, pressing garlic, it has a secondary permitted usage, which is what? Chair. Rabbi Nech, so again, Rabbi will hold, oh, you can therefore move it on Shabbos to use it as a chair. Rabbi Nechemi says, no. Because that's not its real essence. Its real essence is a press, and therefore, again, because it can't be used in its real essence on Shabbos, therefore it's mukta and cannot be moved for any purpose. Eisve, gemarei zekasha, beishamai omrim einotlin es ha'ali lekatzev alav baser. So beishamai says, you can't go ahead and move an ali, or an eli, which is a pestle. Right, you know, you have a mortar and a pestle, right? So the mortar is the thing you hold on to, and the pestle is the receptacle. So what happens? So let's say I want to go ahead and I want to cut the meat on top of the pestle. So inotlin es ha'ali lekatzev alav es habasar. So all I really want to use the pestle for is just the surface. I want to use it as a cutting board to cut the meat on. So the Shammai says, no, you can't move the Oli to cut meat on it on Shabbos. And Beis Hillel says you can. Okay, it's Vishavin, and both agree, Shem Kitev Alav Basar, Sha'asla Taltalov, and both agree that once you cut meat on it, that for sure you can't move it anymore. Look at Rashi. Vishavin, Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, Shenechleku, Benotlin, Eshali, Katzev Alav Basar, Beyom Tov, that both agree that if you went ahead and you cut already meat on it on Yom Tov, Sha'asla Taltalov, Rashi says, the high to Kasharu, Beis Hillel, Vishum Simchas Yom Tov Kasharu, Alma mishum de eli malachtu le'isr, l'ktishas tigris v'tisni, u'klipas eitzim, la'aved bahen oros asr. So we'll say, interestingly enough, the Gemara says over here the following. The Gemara says that even Beis Hillel that allows you to originally move it, that's only for the sake of Simchas Yom Tov. But once the mission has been accomplished, Simchas Yom Tov has been accomplished, you can no longer move the Eli, which again would seem to indicate that halacha l'maisa, even though the Eli might have some other secondary purpose, you see that even Beis Shammai agrees that once Simchas Yom Tov is taken care of, we look at the primary usage of the utensil. The primary usage of the utensil is mukta in nature, and therefore can't be moved. Therefore the Gemara says that perhaps this brisa is reflective of the view of Rabbi Nechemia. Because remember, what does Rabbi Nechemia hold? Rabbi Nechemia holds that on Shabbos you can only move a utensil for its primary usage. Kevan de Shama Lahada Amar Chinana Bar Shamia Mishmei Derav. Hakom Modim. Everyone agrees. Besichi Zairi Umizori. So Sichi are spindles. Zairi are clothes presses. mizuri, literally are hammers or mallets. These are all things that are used by launderers, either for cleaning the clothing or for pressing the clothing. So everyone agrees, sichi zari mizuri, kevan de kaped alayhu, since the launderer is makbid on them. Now what does he mean he's makbid on them? That he's makbid on these utensils that they not get ruined. Miyachid lehu makom. He sets aside for them a place, right? Because sets aside for them a place. And we'll say, what does that mean? So we'll get into this, that there are certain utensils that because they're used for specific tasks, the uman, the person who uses them, is makbid, not just to use them stam. So therefore, he's miyachil emakum, means he sets them aside for non-use. Meaning, I don't just stam use these for anything, I only use them for my malach. So for example, the launderer, with his utensils, uses them for laundering clothing. Laundering clothing, obviously, is prohibited on Shabbos. So the point the Gemara is making is, he would never go ahead and use these items for something else. Right? We'll see the classic example of this is the sakin shel mila, right? The mohel's knife. So the mohel doesn't use his knife to cut his steak. Right? Aside from the other obvious issues that he's not gonna, you know, if there's no clean cutlery, he's not gonna take out his mila knife. So there are certain things that a umam, that a craftsman uses for his craft, that halacha l'maisa designates them for non-use on Shabbos. Hachinami miyachilu makom. So that's the pshat over here also, that by the eli muducha, by the pestle, the idea is also that whatever it is, whoever the craftsman is, the pharmacist, whoever is using these items, sets them aside for use of his profession and doesn't use them for other things. Itmar, Rabbi Chiba, Abba Amr, Rabbi Yochanan, kurnus shal zahabim shaninu. Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Chiba, Abba Sene, Rabbi Yochanan, that's what are we talking about in Mishnah? We're talking about a goldsmith's hammer. A goldsmith's hammer, kurnos shel zahavim shaninu. Look at Rashi. Kurnos shel zahavim. Afapi dekaped aleh tzas shezar shechalak l'radeit tassin. Afidu hachi kevin shemitakin al yidei akol shemak al astan lo moktile the koshkin sheshar nefachim kiraba. But see, interestingly enough, Rabbi Yochanan says over here that the Mishnah is even talking about a goldsmith's hammer. Now, you might have thought that since a goldsmith's hammer has to really be smooth, because at the end of the day, it hammers out sheets of gold, and if it has a nick in it, so you wouldn't end up using it for anything else. But no, since the goldsmith's hammer could be very easily smoothed out again, how do you smooth it out? You hit it against an anvil, you hit it against another piece of iron, that smooths out. Therefore, a person would use it, even for cracking the nuts. Rav Shman Bar Abba Amar, Kurnos Shel B'Samim. Rav Shman Bar Abba says, the Mishnah even refers to a hammer that's used to crush spices. So the Gemara says, Man da'amar b'samim, kol shekin d'zahavim. The Man da'amar who says that you could use a hammer for spices to crack nuts, all the more so would agree that you could use a goldsmith's hammer. However, Man da'amar shal zahavim, but the one who says that you could use a goldsmith's hammer, aval de b'samim kaped alai, would not necessarily agree that you could use a b'samim hammer, a spice hammer. Why? Because both say, since spices have to do also with scent, so sometimes the spice merchants were makbid not to use their spice hammers for anything else because they could pick up the scent of other things and thereby ruin the actual spices. Okay, for our purposes, halacha lemaisa, what comes out from this sugya is that we adopt the position of Rabba, who holds that even halacha lemaisa kurnos shel zahavim, even a regular hammer that's used for a prohibited purpose, would be permitted to go ahead and be used to go ahead and crush the nuts on Shabbos. Because we paskin that even though the hammer is a kli shemolach dole iser, it's an object whose primary purpose is prohibited on Shabbos because it's used for building, for fixing, which are prohibited activities on Shabbos. You could use a kli shemolach dole iser l'tzorech gufo. You could use the body of the kli for a permitted purpose on Shabbos, which in this case would be smashing the nuts. Says the Gemara, ve'es ha'kush ve'es ha'karkar. So remember again, the Mishnah said that you could use the kushes, the spindle, and the karkar. So the Mishnah's case was v'es hakush es hakarkar litchov bo. So the Gemara says over here the following: Tan Rabbanan paga shetamna b'teven. So remember again. So now you're using the spindle, the cushion, the karkar, the spindle, and the weaver's reed to, let's say, go ahead and spear some food, not kill anything. But the idea is you want to grab something, so you want to spear it. So the Brice says like this: Tana Abanan Paga. Paga is an unripened date. Shetimna b'teven, that you went ahead and you covered in straw. Apparently, I guess the reason you would cover it in straw is, I guess there's some level of heat that's generated when you cover it in straw, which would accelerate the ripening process. V'charara, or for that matter, a charara is a biscuit. A biscuit, shetamna v'gecholim, that you covered in coals, right, prior to the onset of Shabbos. Imegula mitzasa, if part of the item, either the date. Now remember, both straw and coals are muktzah on Shabbos. The assumption is this is not straw that you set aside, let's say, to feed your animals. Because obviously you're allowed to feed your animals on Shabbos. If you feed them straw, it's not muktzah. So the idea is like this. So both these items are covered by muktzah items. Im megula mitzasa, if part of the object is visible, is exposed, then muktzah l'tatla, then you can move the object. The Rabbah will say, how would you do that? Rashi points out over here, imagula miktasa, shiyachala ofsa b'makum ha-magula, you could grab the object in the exposed part, da'afilu tiltul min ha-tzadleka, she'in tzarech la'agbiya ha-teven ela ma'agbiya makum magula va'atem nishmat v'nofel. The idea is like this, if part of the fig or part of the biscuit is exposed, then you can lift up the part of the fig or the biscuit that's exposed, and what? You don't have to directly move the mukta. The mukta items will kind of slide away by themselves. The imlah, however, if no part of the item is exposed, aslatatla, then in fact you are not permitted to move it on Shabbos. Rabbi Elazar ben Tadai Omer, tochvin bakush o bekarkar, you spear the item with the kush, with the spindle, with the weaver's reed, vehein minaros me'elehen, and the straw, the coals, fall off by themselves.
Even if nothing is exposed, that's what he means?
Well, as long as you could spear it somehow. Obviously you need some part exposed to be able to spear it, but even lesser amount exposed. You still need some parts exposed. Right? You can't move the straw directly. The idea is, but for the spearing, obviously you need less of an exposure than the first case.
Indeed. Can you clarify? He says you mustn't move it, but still you can't move the angle sort of thing, but can you still crush the figs and all the rest of it and take it as long as you don't move it?
The idea is you can't move mukta directly. That's the idea.
Crush the figs in it and just
you're not crushing. What you do is you want to remove the fig or you want to remove the biscuit. That's what's happening over here. So you could remove it, even though by removing it, the mukta items will end up moving. But since it's what's called tiltum and atzad, you're not moving it directly. It's indirect movement. The mukta, therefore, it's fine. Rav Nachman halacha k'Rav Elazar ben Tadoi. Rav Nachman says the halacha follows Rav Elazar ben Tadoi. Okay, look at Rashi Shabbosai for just a moment. Rashi says, The Meimra, the Savra of Nachman Tiltul min Atzad Loshmei Tiltul, is this to say that Rav Nachman holds that indirect movement of Mokza is not considered to be movement of Mokza? V'ha'amar Rav Nachman, but Rav Nachman himself said, Hai Pugla. Pugla is a radish, right? This Pugla, Milamala Limata Shari. Mimata lemala aser. So we actually had this earlier. So Rav Nachman holds, let's say for example, if you had a radish that you plucked and now you wanted it to be buried in the ground, you put it back in the ground. So now the shaila is, can I remove it on Shabbos? So Rav Nachman says it depends how it's positioned in the ground. If it was positioned in the ground milamala lemata, meaning right side up, then what? Then you could remove it from the ground. However, Mimata lemala, if you reburied it in the ground upside down, then osir, then you can't remove it. So we'll say, what does that mean? Why is that? Because the shape of the radish, remember, is wider on top and smaller on the bottom, which means that if you reburied it right side up, you could technically speaking remove the radish without what? Without moving any earth, right? Because the wider part is on top. However, if you reburied it upside down so that the thinner part is on top, then when you remove it, what's going to automatically happen? You're going to move the earth. See, so you see over here, that's what? That Rav Nachman does not allow Tiltul min Atzad. Now, Rabbi Osai, remember, this is a case of indirect movement of Muktza. But yet, Rav Nachman still holds that you can't do it. So, Rabbi Osai, it seems to contradict what we said before, to which the Gemara answers, Hadr Bei Rav Nachman Me'ahi. Rav Nachman changed his mind. Right? Rav Nachman retracted his position. Originally, he said that Aloch HaLamayisa, you can't do Tiltul min Atzad. You can't even indirectly move Mokza. But then he retracted that position and ultimately felt that you can engage in indirect movement of Mokza. Fine. Well, so by the way, we paskin like that. That you can engage in indirect movement of Mokza when necessary. I mean, if there's some kind of tzorech, and I need a particular object, need a particular item, as long as I don't move the mukta objects directly, but the mukta objects move by themselves, then lamaisa that is permitted. Machat shalyad litol ba'asakot. So remember again, you could move a needle on Shabbos. Remember, a needle, technically speaking, is mukta. Why? Because a needle primarily is used for sewing, and sewing is a prohibited activity on Shabbos. But what can I do? I can go ahead and I can move the needle in order to remove a splinter. So the Gemara says, Shalach le rava b'rei dram. Now we're going to define the splinter case also a little bit more, because the splinter case, we'll go into the case. Shalach le rava b'rei dirabba l'rabi Yosef. So Rava, the son of Rabba, sent the following question to Rabbi Yosef. Yilamdeinu Rabbeinu, Rabbi, teach us. Machat shenital charara o uktsa mahu. What is the status of a needle? Shenital charara means the eye of the needle. Uktsa is the point of the needle. Mahu. What is the status? What is the status of such a needle? Look at Rashi. Mahu. L'taltala. Can I carry it on Shabbos? Can I move it on Shabbos? Mi batal toris kli mine olo. Does it still have the status of a kli? Does a needle still have the status of a kli if it doesn't have its hole, right, its eye, or its point? Amarle, series by the Tinisua. We have it in the Mishnah. Machad shalyad. What does the Mishnah say? If you have a hand needle, right? If you have a needle, machad shalyad, litol ba'asakot. So you can handle a needle on Shabbos in order to remove a splinter. V'chi ima echpas le'lakotz bein nukuva bein l'she'ina nukuva. Now, what does it literally mean? What does it matter to the splinter if the needle has an eye or the needle doesn't have an eye? Meaning, what that means is the fact that the Mishnah said that you can go ahead and move the needle for the sake of removing the splinter indicates to us that, what at least answers part of the question, that what's significant about a needle is what? Is the point. Right? That apparently, even if the needle is missing an eye, it still has the status of a kli. So the Gemara says, Esve. If you have a needle that either had its eye or its point taken away, tahora. Tahora means it's no longer makabel tuma. Why is it no longer makabel tuma? Because it's no longer considered to be a kli. So the Gemara says, the Gemara would try to say the same way that it's lost its designation as being a kli for, tuma, it's also lost its designation of being kli for Shabbos, therefore it's automatically be mukta. Amar Abaye says, one second. Tuma a Shabbos karamis? Are you trying to bring a raya for Shabbos from tuma? Tuma kli maise bo'inon. So the Gemara says, tuma has a totally different set of criteria. By tuma, what do you need? You need kli maise. What does that mean, a kli maise? Look at Rashi. Shemaise shalo kayim. In order to be subject to tuma, a kli has to be usable for what? For the very purpose in which it's created. So therefore, if a needle doesn't have an eye, or a needle doesn't have a point, then what? Then it's not a needle, right? But that's a din in tuma. In Shabbos, mibi dechazi ba'inon. When it comes to Shabbos, how do we define a utensil? A kli is defined as something that's what? That's usable. And the truth is, let's say, for example, a needle, even without its eye, is still usable on Shabbos. All right, can you stick out the splinter? So the Gemara says, "V'ha nami chazye le'mishkal le'bakotz." And this needle, even without the eye, is still usable to take out a splinter. Amar Rava, man de kamosiv shapir kamosiv. Rava says, "The one who answers this well. What's the answer? Midale inyan tuma lav manahum. Since when it comes to tuma, the needle without an eye, right, without a point, is not considered to be utensil. Le'inyan Shabbos nami lav manahum." When it comes to Shabbos, it's also not considered to be utensil. So both sides, the way the Gemara answers it is by saying no, that essentially the definition for utensil is one and the same. There is one definition for utensil, and that definition is true for Shabbos and true for Tumah. And therefore, anytime you find that a utensil does not satisfy the definition or criteria of a kli in one of those inyonim, it automatically applies to the other inyon as well. So if it's not going to be a kli legabe Tumah, it's not going to be a kli legabe Shabbos. We'll see. So the Gemara says the following. The Gemara says, "Meisve, reza kasha, machat bein nukuva, bein she'ina nukuva, mutzul l'taltalo the Shabbos." Yet we see that what the Braisa says, that if you have a needle that does not have an eye, you are permitted to go ahead and carry. Well, I'm sorry, a needle, whether it has an eye or if it doesn't have an eye, can be carried on Shabbos. Right? So Shavuot say, we seem to tell us what? That Halacha Lamaisa has a status of a kli, and not only a kli, a usable kli. Since it could be used to go ahead and remove a splinter, which is suited to be a permitted use, Shabbos usage, therefore, by definition, you carry it on Shabbos. Velo amru nekuva ela le'inyan tuma bilvad. And the only time we said that a needle has to have an eye in order to be considered a kli is where? Is legabe tuma. Tirgama abaye, so I'll say again, tirgama abaye, aliba dirava, begul mi askinon. So Abaye wanted to go ahead and set this up according to Rava, and the way you would set it up, the way you set up the Mishnah, is begulmi. Now, what does it mean, begulmi, Rava will say? Begulmi means unfinished needles. Zimnin, the mimlach alayu, umashvi luhumana. Because sometimes if there's an unfinished needle, right, so sometimes you go ahead and you decide to make it into a full-fledged kli. Aval hecha de nidl charara, o ukta adam zarka lebein grutos. But Abaye wants to suggest that if Rabbi wants to make the following chilik. If you have an unfinished needle, right, so you have a needle that's in the process of being created. So there's that stage, well, let's say before you put the hole in the needle. So in that case, again, it's considered to be a kli as long as it has a function, because there's the possibility that a person may go ahead and ultimately finish it up to be a full-fledged needle, make it into a full-fledged kli. However, it says Abaye, in a situation where the needle was already a needle, but then lost its eye or lost its tip, in that case, people don't hold on to broken needles. And what do? They just simply end up throwing it out. So therefore, again, Abaye wants to suggest that when Rava said that even a needle without a hole is still considered to be a utensil agave Shabbos, what is that talking about? That's talking about an unfinished needle. People will keep that round with the intention that maybe they'll finish it. But when we say that a needle without a hole is not considered to be a kli agave Shabbos, that's a needle, let's say, that had a hole but that broke. Because when it comes to broken needles, people don't hold on to it and will throw it out. Asuve Yenuka was an interesting case. Look at Rashi. Asuve Yenuka. Lahachlik Seder Ivarov. Means kishu nolad ivarav misparkin tzarach liyashron. So this sounds like a child that was born. I guess it must have been a difficult birth, and some of the child's limbs become dislocated. So asubi yenuka means literally a straightening out of the limbs of a child, straightening out the limbs of a child. So the question is, can you do this on Shabbos? He does Shabbos. Obviously, there's no sakonas nefashos involved over here. Obviously, if sakonas the danger to the child, it's not a question. Can you straighten out the limbs of the child on Shabbos? Rav Nachman Osir. Rav Nachman says you can't. You know why? The dummy limitake. Interestingly enough, Rav Nachman seems to take the approach that this is considered to be like Maki Bepatish, delivering the final hammer blow, right? Completing an object, and therefore you may not do it on Shabbos. But Rav Sheshes Shari. Rav Sheshes says you can do it. Amr Rav Nachman, Mena Minala. Rav Nachman says, how do I know that it's Osir? This time, because after all, we saw Ein Osin. Apiktavzin b'Shabbos. You can't do this apiktavzin b'Shabbos. What's apiktavzin? Rashi says lahaki shose mashkim umeki. So we'll say apparently people used to drink this thing to cause them to vomit. Right? There was this drink that you would drink to induce vomiting. Now why would you do that? Veloli refuah. This was not done for medicinal purposes. Elolaharikis mayup. It's to empty out your stomach. Sheyuchal velishtos hayom harbe. In order to be able to eat and drink more. Seems like a little Epicurean in nature. So I'm gonna tell you why the straightening of the limbs of the child are usher. Because look, he brings the raya from the fact that you can't take this, you can't drink this thing that induces vomiting on Shabbos. Why? Now there's no refuah involved in that because people weren't taking it for refuah purposes. But it was considered to be tikkun gadol. It was considered to be the fixing or completely emptying out one's inside was considered to be an act of completing the individual. Therefore, Nachman says the same way that you can't induce vomiting in order to put yourself, we'll call it, in a whole state, so in a new state, you can't arrange the limbs of the child either.
A newborn.
But Rav Sheshes says, Hasam lav orche. Rav Sheshes says, no. The reason why you can't do that on Shabbos is because, again, that's not a normal situation. Hacha urche. Here it is the norm that if a child is born with dislocated limbs, it's the norm to what? to fix the limbs. Rashi says, Havi Orche, and Rashi's quoting to Rav Sheshes, V'hori le kimishem achilu mashkehu. This is a very compelling logic. Rav Sheshes says, the truth is, straining out of the limbs of a child that's born is no different than what? Giving the child something to eat or drink. It's just considered to be basic sustenance, basic care of the child. And remember, there's no refuah attached, there's no makib patish. This is taking care of the child. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Sheshes, La bar chalcha orchei, Amar Rav Sheshes, Mina amin, Allah, how do I know this? This nan, mechat shal yad litol bo asakots. So Rav Sheshes says, after all, what does the Braisa say? The Mishnah says, The Mishnah says that you can go ahead and you can move a needle on Shabbos to remove a splinter. Look at Rashi, litol bo asakots. Alma, tikune gavra b'midi delav l'refua, deleka mashum schika samanum shari. So we'll say, here's what's interesting. The fact that you could remove a splinter on Shabbos tells you what? That you're allowed to fix uncomfortable situations on Shabbos that are not associated with refuah, right? So since you could, why could you remove the splinter? The eye is never, it's not refuah, but yet you could fix the uncomfortable state of the individual. So Rav Sheshes wants to suggest that relocating, is that the term for fixing dislocating?
We know what you mean.
Okay. Right, putting everything back in place. Right, putting everything back in place will not be refuah on Shabbos, and therefore should be permitted. Rav Nachman will respond, no. Hasam pakid, hacha lo pakid. So look at Rashi. Rav Nachman says, there hasam pakid. Hakot hazeh eino mechuber bo elamufgad v'nachut sham v'otzazu eino tikun. Rav Nachman says the reason why you can remove the splinter is because the splinter is considered to be something external to the body. Even though it's embedded in the body, it's something external to the body. Therefore, removal of the splinter is not like makib patish. It's not considered like fixing the individual. As opposed to over here, hacha lo hasam pocket, hacha lo pocket. As opposed to over here, halacha lemaisa, obviously fixing the limbs is something inherent, internal in the baby, and therefore, according to Rav Nachman, that halacha lemaisa is considered to be makib patish, like delivering a final hammer blow and perfecting an imperfect situation.
Wouldn't splinter be a health issue because of infection?
No, because if there's a fear of infection, then maybe that gets to the sakana. It's discomfort. It's discomfort. Discomfort. So just lemaisa, we pass like Rav Sheshes, that halacha lemaisa, you can straighten out the disjointed limbs of the baby, says the Mishnah. So that's a bigger discussion. Medicine on Shabbos is a bigger discussion. Bigger discussion. So says the Mishnah, kana shel zeisim. Kana shel zeisim is literally, a kana is a reed. In this case, it really means like, they used to have like this long utensil that would be used to turn over the olives. Now remember, what he's talking about over here is the following. Look at Rashi. Kana shel zeisim, la'achar masikasan, tsuvar b'ma'aton, Ushmanan misasef bisochan. The Noach Lot says Vyesho. So listen to this. So after they would go out and harvest the olives, they would place all of the olives in a large receptacle. And the goal was the olives themselves generate the heat. Right? The olives generate the heat. So because they generate the heat, ultimately that causes them to soften and it causes the oil to flow out of the olives. Vyesh lakana, I mean it ripens them up. So ultimately, when you take the olives and you put them in the press, they're softened, they're heatened up, and the oil comes out much more easily. And there is a reed, here, literally it's a utensil, to turn the olives over. So the point is, we'll see actually on this staff that you used to turn the goal was to see how soft and how ripened the olives have become. So says the Mishnah, so kona shel zeisim, if you have this staff used to turn over the olives, im yesh kesher berosho, if there is like a knot at the tip of it, mekabel tuma, then the object itself is mekabel tuma. Then the staff itself is mekabel tuma because it's considered to be a complete utensil. Look at Rashi. Im yesh lo kesher berosho, ke'in pikak, shalkana kumus. So essentially this knot, if you could imagine, the tube itself is hollow. The tube itself, right? The staff itself is hollow. You have this knot at the hollow opening of the reed. So if it has a knot there, mekabel tuma, then it's considered to be a utensil, and therefore halacha lemaisa is mekabel tuma. Rabbi said, we'll see the reason for that is because the knot actually had a little bit of an indentation that actually made it as a receptacle. Because the goal, essentially, when you turned over everything, was to see, would there be some oil in the receptacle of the knot? Because it's a receptacle, then therefore it's a kli. Because it's a kli, it's mekabel tuma. Ve'im lav, but if it doesn't have this knot, in mekabel tuma, then the utensil itself is not mekabel tuma. Benkach hu benkach nidl b'Shabbos. But either way, whether it's mekabel tuma or not mekabel tuma, the item is movable on Shabbos, since it has you can use it for permitted purposes as well. Amai, but why is the object mekabel tuma? Pshute klietzu? It should be considered to be. Pshute kliyetz, Rabosai, means flat wooden utensils. Upshute kliyetz in a makablum tuma. And flat wooden utensils not makablum tuma. My timer, why is that? Dumye de sak aboinar. Because Rabosai, remember, the paradigm for objects being makablum tuma sack is a sack. And just like a sack has a base kibble, has a receptacle, attached to it, so to halacha lemaisa, the only time an object is mekabel tuma is if it has a receptacle. Tana mishmei d'Rabbi Nechemya, b'shav shemahapech b'zeisim, hov chov v'rabo, because it's like what we said before, because when you use this staff to go ahead and turn over the utensil, to turn over the olives, there is an indentation in the knot at the tip of it, and you look to see if any oil gathered in that indentation, that shows the olives are ripe, and therefore, again, it has a base kibble, it has a receptacle, therefore it's mekabel tuma. Says the Mishnah. Rabbi Yossi says, Kol hakelim nitalin. On Shabbos, all utensils may be moved, with the exception of chutz min ha-meser ha-gadol. Meser ha-gadol, we'll see, is a large saw, the yeset shal macharisha. Yeset shal macharisha literally means the knife of the plow. What does it mean on both sides? So you know, the whole chav of a plow is what? Is that it overturns the earth. How does it overturn the earth? There's a sharp instrument that's attached to the plow. That's the yeset. Yeset literally means a peg. In this case over here, it means the knife. I don't know if the knife is. I'm sure. The blade. Right? The blade of the plow. And on both sides, the logic that Rabbi Yossi seems to be espousing is the following. That apparently this large saw, Rashi points out, Meser Gadol, was used to cut beams, and the Yeset Shal Macharisha is obviously used to plow the field. So these were objects that were set aside for their specific uses, and were not used for other uses, and since their uses are prohibited on Shabbos, therefore Lemaisa, you can't move them on Shabbos. But the Mishnah seems to say, according to Rabbi Yossi, all other utensils may be moved, as long as they have a permitted use on Shabbos. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav Nachman, Hai Uchla Diktzori. Uchla Diktzori, Bosai, is a launderer's sieve. Now, what used to happen, apparently, is when the launderer would go in and press clothing, he used to have this utensil with holes, small holes, and they would sprinkle water on top of the clothing, I guess in order to allow the pressing process to be a little bit easier. So the Rav Nachman says that this Uchla Diktzori is Kiyaseh Shal Macharisha, is no different than the blade of the plow. And the same way the blade of the plow is set aside for non-use, because again, it's only used to plow the field, so to Halacha Lemaisa, you can't use the launderer's sieve for anything else also. Amar Abaye, Charba du Ushbachi is a tanner's knife. Sakina de Ishkafta. So look at Rashi. Sakina de Ishkafta is a butcher's knife. Vichatsina de Nagri. Right? Chatsina de Nagri is, I'm sure there's a technical term for this also, is a carpenter's, I guess it's like a carpenter's plane. Right? It's something that the carpenter uses to smooth out the wood. Is that a plane?
Yes.
That's right, a carpenter's plane. Chatsina de Nagri, all of these things, kiyoset shal macharishatam. So you see where the Gemara is going with all this. That there are certain, we'll call it, tools of the craft, right? Certain things that people use specifically for their craft, for their parnasa, that, you know, the carpenter is not going to go ahead and, use his plane to peel cucumbers, right? He's not going to do that. And the butcher is not going to use his knife to go ahead and, I was going to say do a bris milah, but that's not a good example, right? He wouldn't use it, again, to cut a steak. Right, these are specialized utensils, and therefore, the Gemara is making the point that they're like the blade of the plow. They're like the blade of the plow, like the carpenter's saw. So the Gemara goes weiter. Tan Rabbanan, listen to this. We'll say now we get a little bit of history about Muktzah. Tan Rabbanan, Barishona Hayu Omrim, Shloshe Kelim Nitalin B'Shabbos. In the beginning, they said the beginning they said that only three utensils can be moved on Shabbos. What are they? Miktsoa shel devela, right? Miktsoa shel devela literally means a knife that's used to cut a cake of pressed figs. Vizuama listeron shel kedera, and a ladle to be used to scrape off the foam from the top of the pot. Vesakin kitana shel gabei ha-shulchan, and a small regular knife that's used on the table. Okay, what happens? So what the Gemara is pointing out over here is that apparently once upon a time in the beginning of this process, the laws of Muktzah were very restrictive. We'll see why that is. Remember, Muktzah is Dirabana. So once upon a time, the laws of Muktzah were very restrictive to the point that only three utensils were permitted to be moved on Shabbos. Hetiru, they permitted. V'chazru v'hetiru, and then they permitted some more. V'chazru v'hetiru, and then they permitted some more. Ad Shamru, until they said, Kala kelim nitalin b'Shabbos. In reality, all utensils may be moved on Shabbos. Chutz min masra gadol v'yeset shel macharisha. So we'll say what began originally as saying all utensils can't be moved except for three, then turned into what? All utensils may be moved except for two, right? Except again for. And now we'll say we've already seen that two doesn't really mean two. Two means right? This becomes like a category. That you essentially can't move utensils that are like the large saw and like the blade of the plow, which represent items that are set aside for specific use that people would not use for other purposes. What does it mean? Ma yetiru v'chazer v'yetiru? V'chazer v'yetiru. What does it mean they permitted and then permitted again and then permitted again? Amar Abaye, listen to this. Hetiru davar shemalach do lehetzel tzorach gufo. First thing they permitted was that if you have a utensil that is used primarily for a permitted purpose, but also can be used for a prohibited purpose. So they permitted that usage of that item tzorach gufo, that you could use the object itself in a permitted fashion. The chazer ve'etiru, then they went ahead again and came along and permitted. Davar shemalach to lehet letzorach makomo. Well, so you haven't seen this yet, but then they permitted a different idea, which is that you can move a permitted utensil, not just to use it for a permitted purpose, but what? If you need the space that it occupies. Right? So let's say, again, the permitted object is sitting on my table. I need the space. I don't need the utensil, but I need the space. They were marked that you could use the move the object to use the space.
Move it directly.
Correct. Pick it up and move it directly. The chazer v'etziru, and then they came back and once again permitted what? Darvash ha-malach to le'isser, that if I have a utensil whose primary purpose is prohibited, but I want to use it in a permitted fashion, that I could do that, letzorech gufo. I can move it if I want to use it in a permitted fashion. So the Gemara says, letzorech gufo in, letzorech mekomo lo. But I can't move a kli shemalach to le'isser for what? Because I want to use the space that it occupies. Va'adayin b'yado achas in, b'shtei yadav lo. But, furthermore, they only permitted a utensil that can be moved with one hand, but not the utensil that's so big that what? That requires two hands. Ad sha'amro, so they ultimately came along and said, Kol ha'kelim nitalin b'Shabbos, all utensils may be moved on Shabbos, v'afilu b'shtei yadayim, even utensils that need to be moved with two hands. Amro li Rava, so Rava said, 1 second. Michti, hetiru katani. It says that the rabbis permitted these things. Mali letzorech gufo, mali letzorech mekomo. Why would you be mechalik between permissiveness for the actual use of the object versus for the space that the object occupies? You know, both say what Rabbi seems to be bothered by is tzorech gufo and mekomo kind of go hand in hand. And now what the Gemara before was trying to say is that we're mechalik between these two things. And at some point in time, Chazal allowed you to move an object tzorech gufo, but not tzorech mekomo. Rava says that doesn't make sense. They're one and the same. So Ela Amar Rava, therefore Rava has a different, really what they're arguing about, by the way, over here, is the history of the Takana. So Rava has a different history of the Takana. Originally, Hetiru Darish HaMalach Do Leheter, Bein Letzorech Gufo, Bein Letzorech Mekomo. The first thing they permitted is that, again, if you have a utensil that is primarily used for permitted purposes, but it could also be used for something prohibited. So Chazal allowed you to use the permitted object on Shabbos for a permitted purpose, and also to move the object if you need the space that it occupies. The Chazro v'hetiro mechama letzel. They then came along in what? Also permitted, that you can move the object. Mechama letzel literally means from the sun to the shade. What is that a reference to? Moving the object to save yourself from financial loss. So let's say I don't need the object itself. I don't need the space that it occupies, but I forgot my object in a place where it could get stolen, or it could get lost. So I could suffer a financial loss. Chazal said, in a klisha malachto leheter, you are permitted to move the object mechamel itself, save it from being lost. The chazav itzir, then they came along again and matured what? And permitted, davasha malachto leiser. That if you have a kli, if you have a utensil that has a primarily prohibited purpose, but a secondary permitted purpose, that you can move it on Shabbos Sorech Gufo, if you need to use it in a permitted purpose, and Litzorech Mekomo, and you could use it also if you need the space that it occupies in Mechama Letzel, lo. But Rabbos, when it comes to the kli Shemalach Tole Isser, you may not move, you could use that, you can move that object if you need to use it, if you need the space that it occupies, but you may not move it in order to what? Save it from being stolen or from being lost. The adayin, but still, ba adam echad in b'shnei v'nei adam lo. That's only true of an object that one person could carry. But if the object is so big that two people need to carry it, no. Ad sha'amru, until the Chazal came along and said again, kol hakelim nitalin b'shabbos, afilu b'shnei v'nei adam. Until Chazal finally came along and said, no, any utensil, obviously, in the guidelines that we said before, can be carried on Shabbos, even if it's so big that it needs two people. Esve Abayis, Abayi raises the kasha. What about the case that we saw before? Meducha, in the case of the garlic press, the Braisa said, Im yesh shum metaltlin oso. If there's garlic in the press, then you can carry the press. Ve'im lav, in metaltlin oso. But if there's no garlic in there, you can't carry it, which would seem to tell us what's Rabosai. Now remember, the garlic press is a klisha malachto le'isser, an object that is used in a prohibited fashion, but also has a secondary permitted use, which is what? You can sit on it, a chair. You can sit on it. And yeah, what does the Braisa say? The Braisa says you can't carry it unless there's garlic in it, which would seem to tell us that a klisha malach to leser cannot be moved with tzorach gufo. Hacha b'yaskinon, what's the case over here? Mechama letzel. The case is where you wanted to move the press. Why? Literally from the sun to the shed, you want to save yourself from financial loss. Well, that we just said before, that aloch ha'maisi, you can't move a klisha malach to leser mechama letzel. Therefore, the Braisa says the only way you'd be permitted to go out and move it is if what? Is if there's garlic in it, because then the press is considered to be a utensil, receptacle for the garlic itself, and there you can move it on Shabbos. Esve, v'shavin shim katzav alav basar, sh'as l'taltalo. So I will say again, now the Gemara quotes another braisa that says, we had this before, that both b'shamein agree that what? After you go ahead and you cut the meat on Yom Tov, on the Pesel, that you can no longer move it. So what do you see from there again? That it appears that a klisha malachto le'isser cannot be moved on Shabbos, even on Zorach Gufo, to which the Gemara says, no, hachanami mechama letzel. There it's also talking about what? Why are you moving the Pesel? In order to save yourself from financial loss. I suppose they will stop over here for today. So just to set up, end up on the right track, we're going to see that we're going to adopt the approach, and the we'll call it the history of Rava. So that according to Rava, therefore, the place where we are really at is the following. That a kli shemalach to leheter, all right, a utensil that has a primarily permitted purpose, can be moved letzorech kufo, if you need to use it itself, letzorech makomo, if you need the space that it occupies, and mechama letzel, and to save yourself from financial loss. A kli shemalach to leiser, an object that is primarily prohibited but has a secondary permitted use, can be moved, A, letzorech gufo, if you use it in a permitted fashion, letzorech mekomo, you need the place that it occupies, but you may not move it, mechama letzel. You may not move it in order to save yourself from a financial loss. All right, we'll pick up with this tomorrow, Mirza Hashem.
Rabbi, you kept referring to the but it says more